This week's interview for the interview hour of the Metal Command Show will be with Matt Johnson of Pharaoh. And Matt, you know, talk a little bit about what's going on with the band, what Pharaoh is up to, and just talk about what you guys have going on right now as a band.
Well, we are in the middle of doing something that Pharaoh has kind of never really done before, and that is to say we're rehearsing as something kind of sort of like a real band. We're booked to play a festival in Chicago in May, and of course, you know, it being Pharaoh, nothing's easy. The way the Pharaoh live experience works is dustly. Our bass player, Chris Kearns, is not really available to do live stuff. He's got, you know, work commitments and that sort of thing. So, okay, he said, easy enough, we'll get another bass player. But it's not like that. Our drummer, who plays in a bunch of other bands, decides that he wants to play bass when we play live. So then we need to find another drummer. So we have to bring somebody else in to play drums, and we also need to bring somebody else to play rhythm guitar. When we played before, we used Matt Crooks for rhythm guitar. He's the guy who owns the studio where we record, and he produces our albums. He lives down in D.C., and this time we're using our friend James Getz from the band Division to play drums, and he lives down in Baltimore. So I rented a rehearsal space in Baltimore. I live outside of Philly, so it's about equidistant for both me and Matt to get to Baltimore. So once a week, the three of us are getting together and working up a set. Tim is in Pittsburgh, so he hasn't been rehearsing with us, but we'll bring him out periodically. And same deal with Chris Black, who's going to play bass. And our first all-hands practice is going to be next Saturday. So, yeah, this is kind of something that we've never done. Even when we played live in 2008, we just got together 4 days before we flew to Germany for our first gig, and that was the only rehearsals that we had, just a few days of that. So this time, hopefully, the three of us who are getting together all the time will be tight enough, and, you know, the bass player, he's just a bass player. How good does he have to be? And then we're just kind of hoping that Tim does his homework and learns the lyrics and keeps his voice in shape. So that's what we've got going on. So we've got the album coming out in March. We've got the show in May, and hopefully we'll be able to book some other shows locally and maybe even do some limited touring.
Well, I have to tell you that I really, really like the album quite a bit. And the one thing that really stood out, there were a few things that stood out to me. I always think that each Pharaoh album gets better as it goes along, but one of the things that I think was interesting is that I think your guitar playing and what you're playing right now is a lot better, and I think it's a little bit more complicated than what you normally have been playing, but I think as a guitar player, you've kind of taken yourself to an entirely new level. And although I've always liked the Pharaoh releases, the last three, I think that there's something different about this album, and you've really taken your guitar playing to the next level, basically. And, you know, what was your mindset going into making this record, and was this your intention to do this?
Well, I don't know if I've really gotten that much better at guitar. I mean, maybe a little bit, just because, you know, I'm older and I play guitar somewhat regularly, but I'm unfortunately not the kind of guy with the discipline to just sit down and do exercises and, you know, practice in that regimented way that really makes you better. But when I'm playing and just screwing around, I am always trying new things and trying to improve my technique a little bit and come up with new sorts of phrases and textures to put into my playing. So that maybe explains that, but you're right that this album is more complicated. There are definitely a lot of pretty tricky guitar parts. I probably could have played them last time, I just didn't write them last time, you know? But it was something that I wanted to do this time around to sort of max out the complexity and noodliness of the riff. And, you know, when I write, I don't really know what direction the song's going to take vocally. You know, I normally write the complete song, full arrangement and everything, and hand it over to Tim, and he puts vocals where he thinks they're needed. Now, in most cases, I kind of know, you know, this is going to be a verse, and this is going to be a chorus, and that's kind of the end of it. You know, I might suggest, oh, I kind of heard some vocals here, or maybe here, and sometimes he'll sing there, and sometimes he won't. And he's not the only guy. Sometimes Chris Black, our drummer, writes the melodies and the lyrics for my songs as well. And sometimes I do, but that's always a completely distinct process. So when I'm writing, it's important to me that every riff be interesting in and of itself. You know, this is sort of the hallmark, I think, of American power metal versus European power metal, is that American power metal is riff-oriented. You know, you listen to even the really good European power metal bands, when the singer's singing, there is nothing going on guitar-wise. You know, they're just riding some whole note power chords just to, you know, provide a chordal foundation for the singer to work over. And we don't do that in Faro, you know. Everything's busy all the time, and even if you heard this in an instrumental mix, I think that it would be just as interesting musically. So that's kind of how we end up with something like that. So, yeah, it is a little more complicated, but yeah, I don't know.
I remember a couple years back we talked quite in depth about the album Be Gone and many of the lyrical themes behind that album. And talk a little bit, let's talk about Bury the Light. And, you know, is this kind of, do all these songs, are they related? I mean, is there a loose theme to all these tracks? Maybe talk a bit about that.
Well, after doing Be Gone and shaping an album like that that was sort of thematically united, we sort of decided, not necessarily outright, but I think it was a general consensus that we weren't going to do that this time, or at least we weren't going to do it on purpose. If it happens, it happens. If it doesn't, it doesn't. And so I don't really think that this album has the same kind of cohesion lyrically that Be Gone did. But as for the title, it's kind of a long story as well. The original title of the album was going to be Year of the Blizzard. And there is a song called Year of the Blizzard, but the title was cooked up by Chris Black sometime when we were recording Be Gone. I don't know, he just thought this would be a cool title, and I said, you're right, it's a cool title. And the other thing we wanted is we kind of thought it would be cool to have a predominantly white cover, so we figured we would be able to get J.P. Fournier to paint some sort of snowscape, and that would be it. But as we were finishing the album, it kind of became clear that while there wasn't really a theme to the album, the title Year of the Blizzard is so specific to just that song that it kind of didn't work as a title for the album, you know, because it doesn't really speak in any way to what's going on in the other songs. So this was not too long ago, a few months ago, 3 months, 4 months, and then we kind of had to scramble to find another title. And, you know, we obviously looked at all the other song titles, and none of them, you know, none of them worked as an album title, so that makes this the first Faro album without a title track. What are you going to do about that? But when we did look at the lyrics and try to think of something that kind of does speak to all of them, we noticed that a lot of them make references to the light, and not in a positive way. Like, sort of, it turns out that on this particular album, the light tends to represent something bad. Like, for instance, in that first song, "Leave Me Here to Dream," the light is—it's like that light at the end of the tunnel that people experience, you know, when they're about to die. And the way we see it, that's not something to look forward to, because that means you're dead. So, In that song, it's basically about this person having this experience fighting the light so that they can stay alive. And we framed the light sort of in negative contexts elsewhere in the album. So we had a lot of different titles, you know, Fight the Light or Afraid of the Light, or I don't remember what they all were. And Bury the Light, it had a nice ring to it, and we were able to come up with a concept for the painting. So that's what we went with.
I remember Faro being more of a project with many people from many living in many different parts of the country, and you guys were kind of basically content on doing that. And now, you know, what's changed? What has made you decide, hey, you know what? Let's take this band on the road. Let's play some shows.
Well, first off, the band itself has always been the same four guys. We haven't ever had like a lineup change. We've had a few different people help us out when we played live, and we obviously have lots of guests and that sort of thing, but, like, the actual band has always been the same four guys. And playing live, it was never a priority for Faro, and it became at a certain point not really feasible just because the band was so spread out geographically. For a while, Tim lived in Florida, two of us lived in Pennsylvania, and Chris Black lives in Chicago. Tim has since moved back to Pennsylvania, albeit the other side of the state from me and Kearns. But that makes it at least a little more feasible from a logistical point of view of getting everybody together and rehearsing. But what happened is we never put any emphasis on playing live. And after before Be Gone came out, we got some offers to play. We were offered this slot at the Keep It True Festival in Germany, and it's a free trip to Germany. How are we going to turn that down? So we threw together a live lineup, and we did it. And sort of building on what little momentum there was there, we played another gig in Chicago at a kind of tiny festival thing called the Ale Horn of Power. And the gigs both went okay. I mean, the German one was a little shaky. It was our first gig ever. It was a big gig, and there were some technical problems. But I mean, it was fun. We had a good time in Germany and at the festival. The Chicago show actually went pretty well. And, maybe we could have done more shows, but we kind of just didn't for whatever reason. Everybody has their own other interests and whatnot, and I guess it became time to start thinking about writing for the next album. We had to finish the EP, and sort of got pushed off the front burner. But we had sort of been talking amongst ourselves and thinking, one of the things that's holding Pharaoh back is that we're not a live band. And, it's not that you even have to go out there and, do 100 shows a year. It's just that there's sort of a distinction between bands that play live and bands that do not. Even if we play a week of shows a year, that makes us a band that plays live, not just some hermetic studio band. So we thought it would be a good thing to do, and we thought it would be fun. So we were actually planning on or hoping to do a 10-day tour last fall with Twisted Tower Dire, but sort of at the last minute, Tim couldn't make it. He went back to school, and he was unable to get that time off. So that was shelved. But we were offered this festival out in Chicago in May, playing with some other classic metal bands like Virgin Steel and Broca's Helm, and so I got this rehearsal thing going on, and we're hoping that this will create sort of a stable live foundation, having at least three of us that are pretty on the ball as far as the live set's concerned. And we're ready to get out there. We know that we're not going to make money touring. I'm gonna have to look at a tour as a vacation where I'm spending money like any other vacation. But I think that it'll be enjoyable, and hopefully it will change the profile of Pharaoh in a positive way.
Being an avid collector like myself, Matt, and I know you buy a lot of albums and stuff like that, what are some of your favorite albums from 2011?
2011. Well, I think my favorite disc was Bilateral by Leprous.
Okay.
Just a killer progressive metal. Kind of like Pain of Salvation if they didn't take themselves so seriously and were still a metal band. I thought that was great. I thought the Arch Matthäus disc was really excellent. Three, the sort of proggy metal band from New York on Metal Blade, they put out probably their best album of their career. What else? The only power metal, like real power metal album that I got into was Solar Fragment. Do you know this band?
I've never heard of them.
I think they're on AFM, but I could be wrong. They're a German band. Sort of roughly Blind Guardian-ish power metal, but there's something about them they really write great songs. They're maybe sort of in the quadrant of Blind Guardian or Orden Ogen, if you know that band.
Mm-hmm.
Heavy, muscular German power metal, kind of layered. It's really a good disc. I think that's their second album. Sort of blanking. I did make a list of this stuff, but I can't remember it off the top of my head.
I just interviewed Leprous before I talked to you.
Oh, did you?
For my show, yeah.
Oh, no kidding. Yeah, they're a great band.
Yeah, it was one of my, that album was one of my top 15. Yeah, it was in my top 15, I know for a fact. for the year. It was one of my easily in my top 20. So
yeah, and I liked that band before, but this new album, I mean, it's on a whole different level. I mean, the sound is great, the playing is killer, and that guy's voice just got better. I was really blown away by that album. Really, really good stuff.
Well, a lot of these German festivals are really cool, and you know, for those people that have never made it to any of them, I have to say that they're missing out. But you know, talk a little bit about, you know, Playing to Keep a True Festival, and talk about what German festivals are like in general, because there's a big, big difference between what happens, what it's like in America, and what it's like over in Germany. And talk a little bit about the biggest difference between American fans and German fans.
Yeah, it's a totally different thing. I mean, we played this festival called Keep It True, which by the standard of German festivals is relatively small. I mean, I think that it's maybe 2,500, 3,000 people, something like that. But, you know, by comparison, that's almost twice the size of the biggest comparable festival in the States, which would be Prague Power. And while there are people from all over that come to this, it's still primarily German. So it's still one country producing 3,000 people who are pretty much only into old-school American heavy metal. So that's, I mean, that's something that you just aren't ever going to see here, you know. The festival we're playing in May, it's called Ragnarocker. And, you know, I think that they're sort of aiming at kind of an American equivalent of Keep It True, but they're not even going to get a fraction of that, because that's just not how the market is here. And these guys are serious. I mean, it's all denim and leather at these things. And a lot of weird spandex. You know, it's a funny thing, you know. If you cast your memory back to, say, I don't know, like the mid-80s, there was a time when pretty much all metal bands would wear spandex and strange clothes. You know, it wasn't just the glam bands and the real heavy metal bands. You know, you look at a lot of those old Metal Blade bands, and, you know, they've got the big hair and the spandex, but they're playing, you know, speed metal. And I guess when hair metal, you know, became the phenomenon that it was in the United States, it really made spandex something that was disreputable for anybody but an incredible poser to wear. And I think maybe that never happened in Germany. I don't know. I don't know the history there, but you go to Keep It True, and, I mean, these are guys are serious metalheads, and they're wearing, you know, leopard print spandex. It's very odd and amusing, and I love it.
Kind of looks like an airplane hangar to Keep It True Festival every time I look at the pictures.
It's not a hangar. It does kind of look that way. I think what it actually is like, it's like a community sports center or something like that. Like, I think they have maybe indoor soccer matches there, or volleyball, or I have no idea. It's definitely not a hangar. It's got permanent, like, bleacher type seating along the sides. Yeah, it's a strange place, but it has skylights, so kind of, you know, during the day in that festival, the place is lit with natural light, and it's always a little weird seeing heavy metal bands play in the sunlight. It's kind of unnatural.
Well, I want to talk a bit about the response so far that you probably had to this record. And one of the things I noticed, I put up a link onto my Facebook site for my radio show, and even I, you know, talked about the link on my show, and I received quite a good reaction from people. I would probably tell you that in all in the positive range, but most of the people hadn't heard of you. But they, you know, they heard the song Castles in the Sky. And I had a lot of people emailing me, talking to me, telling me, hey, these guys are really good. I've never heard of them before. Where did you find them at? And, you know, my response was basically, well, they've been around for for quite a few years now. I mean, this is their fourth album. And, you know, I have to ask you, how's the response been for you since you posted that song? And how's the response been for the new record so far?
We haven't seen a lot of reaction from just fans. I guess because I'm not the guy running, say, the Facebook page. You know, maybe that's probably where a lot of that stuff is going. And I'm not on Facebook. I'm one of these weird Facebook denier types. So I have no idea what's going on there. But for this album, I've been doing pretty much all the press, because right at the moment, Chris Black is finishing writing the next Dawnbringer album. So I've been talking to all the journalists and whatnot, and the reaction that I've heard so far has all been really, really good. And And yeah, you know, when you're making the album, particularly when it takes a long time, and you know, you can't really see the forest for the trees, and it becomes hard to separate the final product from the process. You know, it's like if the process was hard, it sort of negatively impacts the way you feel about the album. And so I still don't think that there's been enough time for me to properly absorb the album just as like a created musical artifact. That probably won't happen until I get my actual CDs and can just, you know, sit down sometime, put in the stereo, and listen to it for what it is. But yeah, the reaction has been really good, and I was a little concerned that maybe this album wasn't moving forward enough. You know, it's like from After the Fire to The Longest Night, and from The Longest Night to Be Gone, you can hear these huge jumps in our, you know, playing ability and our compositional ability and just the overall tone of the band, and it didn't seem as obvious to me the differences between Be Gone and this album, although when I was writing it, it felt like it was different. It felt like there were new textures and new sounds. And, yeah, by the time it was done, we were done recording it, I didn't have a feel any longer for the truth of that this stuff really was displaying some growth. But from talking to other people, it seems like other people think that it's there, so I'm going to have to take their word for it now. So, yeah, it's been really good. So, I haven't seen a lot of reviews yet, but, you know, these days, with almost all journalism happening online, the reviews tend to happen a little closer to the release date than they used to. So, mm-hmm. Yeah, we'll see.
Well, the first reaction that I had to it, like I said, you know, the first guy that responded to me within like 5 minutes. He goes, "Oh my God, these guys are unbelievable. I've never heard of them before, but these guys are really awesome."
Yeah, well, you know, we're never going to be a household name. I mean, you have to be pretty into the underground to know who Pharaoh is.
Yeah,
it's like I've met people who are into death and had never heard the Control Denied album. I mean, it's being someone who's such a crazy collector and so deep in the underground and so involved in this whole thing. It's always kind of like a reality check to discover that there are people who listen to this stuff a lot more casually and who will, you know, they might even have a Blind Guardian album because Lord knows some friend gave it to them, or, you know, they heard it on a radio show or whatnot, and they won't have anything else like that. So, I mean, I'm sure there's a pretty large untapped population of people who would like Pharaoh. I don't exactly know how to, you know, get the word out, but we'll do all this press and, you know, hopefully we'll make a few new fans. I know with every album we've done, we've sold more than the one before it. We get more press attention than we did for the last one. So, I mean, we do appear to be on an upward trajectory that way. And it's also telling when we do these interviews and I talk to somebody who, a journalist who had never heard us before, and suddenly, you know, they got this new album and they love it and they want to talk. And, you know, that can only be a good thing. So, Fingers crossed.
Well, Matt, to end off the interview, do you have any last words or last things to say to all the metal fans that will be checking out this interview?
Well, if you've never heard of us, we are Pharaoh, and we have 4 albums and an EP. And if you like what you're hearing on this one, there's a good chance you'll like what we did on the last one. And, yeah, I hope you get a chance to explore our stuff. It's not that hard to find. If you are one of the remaining 10 or 15 people who buy CDs, you can buy them, you know, wherever heavy metal CDs are purveyed. But we're also available on iTunes and Amazon, and of course, there's always the piracy option. And you know, I don't really have a problem with that. You know, if you want to check us out, I'm sure you know some illicit way to find MP3s of all our stuff. And you know, if you really like it, well, then maybe throw a few bucks our way.